Hello and welcome to the Tour de France podcast, humansevent.com. My name is Richard Moore. I am joined tonight by Lionel Burney.
Good evening, Richard.
And Daniel Freib.
Hello, Richard.
Speak up, Daniel. I'm worried about what we're going to talk about today, guys. I'm really... uneventful stage, but we'll crack on with that in a minute. Lionel, can you just describe where we are, which isn't quite as nice as where we were a couple of minutes ago?
No, we were sat outside on a nice grassy bank in the sunshine, just outside the, I think it's the Parc des Expositions, isn't it?
We? Oui.
Here in...
Now it's a bit like a provincial nightclub where we are, isn't it?
We're in the sort of... Mm. We're next to the cloakroom in the inside of the building.
They must have clubs like this in Watford.
There's lots of neon light here.
But it's too windy out there, basically.
It's too windy out there. Now, Daniel, memories of this press room, particularly vivid memories of this press room, 2008.
There was a bit of a tussle, wasn't there?
Oh, yes.
Do you want to tell the story, Rich?
Well, it was the final time trial of the 2008 Tour, still all to play for. Carlos Sastre was in contention. He was in the yellow jersey.
Did you check this, by the way?
Yes.
Okay, good.
And, no, but I remember it very clearly. And Sastre was going for the victory, and his... some of his teammates were off early, obviously, and they, having done their rides, they came into the press room to watch the how the stage unfolded. They were Stuart O'Grady, Kurt Arvidsson, and it was Jens Voigt, just the two of them.
Two.
So the two of them came in and sat at the front of the press room watching the TV screens, and all of a sudden, I was working, I remember there was a huge commotion.
Yeah.
And Daniel, can you take up the story?
Well, the press chief, or the guy who was in charge of the press room back then, was a guy called Mathieu Duplat. He was a fairly...
He could be quite abrasive, couldn't he?
Yeah.
As we find out a couple of years later.
Yeah, oh, that's true, actually. Arvidsson and O'Grady were minding their own business. This often happens, and I'm never quite sure why it happens for the final time.
Was he as muscular as Marcel Kittel?
Oh, God. Riders tend to float into the press room, and there's never ever been a problem with it. But Rich, I've got a notion that this was the tour when there were rumours of Brian Nygaard, the CSC press officer, compiling dossiers on the press and having some kind of written blacklist.
Right.
And I think Gilles Laroque, who's another journalist from Reuters, had made some kind of complaint about this.
Mm.
Anyway, they were sitting there minding their own business, watching the race. Mathieu sort of stalked over, and he basically manhandled them, didn't he? It was very provincial nightclub-esque, wasn't it?
Out.
Get out. And he literally wrestled them out, didn't he?
He literally did.
And there was a slanging match across the press room.
Yeah, they were shouting and
swearing.
He said, we don't come on your bus.
So you can't come in our
press
room.
You can't come in our press room. It was wonderful.
I didn't know Mathieu was Glaswegian.
He was putting on a Glaswegian accent in order to sound a bit tougher.
Yeah.
Anyway, let's crack on with the show.
You're listening to the Tour de France podcast with humansinvent.com and Sharp.
What a stage. What a stage.
Stage 13, yeah. Unlucky for some.
What happened today, Daniel?
That's a bit of a cop-out, Rachel.
No,
what happened?
Okay, well, the race split into lots of different echelons. We don't often see that. I think Omega Pharma, Quickstep were the first instigators of that. As I understand it, 63 kilometres into the race, there were 110 still to go. And Mark Cavendish, the stage winner, told us afterwards that Gert Stegemans, he said there wasn't a plan, but that Stegemans said to him, "It's windy, you know, be ready."
I've heard that's not true. There was a plan, and it was discussed last night in the hotel where Belkin and Omega Pharma Quickstep were staying.
Yeah.
And it was decided last night that in the right conditions, something would happen, and those two teams would collaborate.
Right.
Belkin had scouted this stage out back in May, I gather. So they were aware that if the wind blew, that...
It's fascinating, isn't it? Because a Belgian and a Dutch team, and this is the sort of racing that is synonymous with those countries. What's interesting, too, is that... you know, Belkin are the old Rabobank team who were always very good in these kind of conditions.
And this is typical sort of first stage, second stage of Paris-Nice-type terrain. I mean, it really is the breadbasket of France. It's not very inspiring. in terms of scenery, but there is often wind. And what was interesting about today as well is that it really didn't seem windy. I remember we passed a wind farm on the motorway, and it wasn't the propellers weren't moving at all. And at the finish,
maybe it was
there
turned
was
off.
Well, the finish, there wasn't a lot of wind either. Maybe 15, I think 15 kilometres an hour.
Yeah. So I mean, but it must. Well, was it just those teams obviously just drilled it? I mean, we got a better view of the second split that occurred. Well, the first split, let's go back to that, because that saw Valverde and Movistar out the back, as well as Kittel, which was quite a surprise.
Mm. Well, Valverde had a problem, hadn't he? Rear wheel puncture, was it?
Did he puncture? No, I thought he punctured after the split, and then they were close to getting back on.
Right,
when
but
he
Belkin were really turning the screw at that point, and there was a bit of discussion afterwards. Mick Rogers of Saxo said that they didn't feel it was appropriate to put the hammer down at that point because Valverde, second overall, was off the back. And
Chris Froome said something quite similar.
And other teams, and we can only assume Belkin was one of them, but other teams apparently tried to enlist a bit of help, and Saxo said, no, we're not going to join in at the moment. But Belkin, you know, Bauke Mollema, I think, I saw a comment where he said, made a comment that, you know, Valverde hasn't necessarily been particularly sportsmanlike in the past, and they had no qualms
by
about
doping, do you mean?
But well, you very possibly, yeah. But also, you know, think back to Paris-Nice last year when Movistar turned the screw on Leifheimer riding for Amiga Pharma Quickstep, I think, when he had a problem, and Movistar they had no qualms then to put Leifheimer out of the overall picture in that race. And so what goes around comes around, and at the end of the day, the opportunity to put Valverde out of the race.
Well, what I'd like to know, I mean, obviously this plan that was hatched, Omega Pharma would have been thinking of a stage win for Cavendish. Belkin would have been thinking of their two men for the overall, Mollema and Tendam. But that would only have been worth doing if they had been able to eliminate people. Who do you think they had in mind? Was it Valverde? Was it perhaps Froome?
I think in these situations you just take what you get. I don't think there was necessarily any concerted plan, unless at that point they'd looked back and seen that Valverde was a long way back. But I think some people will have been taken by surprise today. I understand there was a lot of talk in the peloton or among teams yesterday about the possibility of crosswinds. Without going into too much detail, but I'm about to, Philippe Maudy of the Saxo Bank team, their director sportif, is from Tours. And there was a spot on the route yesterday which was apparently ideal, or it was thought that it was going to be ideal for crosswinds, but the council recently planted a row of trees along that road, and so therefore it's no longer particularly windy. And the lack of echelons
those
yesterday...
Those trees weren't planted by Movistar.
The lack of echelons yesterday supposedly hinged on
The trees,
wow. Yeah. Bay trees, I think they might have been. Is it? But no, what are the trees? The kind of quintessential Tour de France, Front Profonde, tree-lined road. I forget what. I'm no arborist.
Not poplars.
Arborist.
Poplars.
No. I'm not sure there. No. I'm not sure there.
I know. I know. I could draw you one.
Yeah.
No good for a podcast.
Anyway,
final.
It was them.
Yeah, well, it's great racing, isn't it?
I should just say, I mean, yeah. Valverde's lost 9 minutes 54 to the Contador group, completely out of the race. I mean, once they were off the back, they chased pretty hard, but they weren't getting an awful lot of help, were they? They were on their own. Fortunately, they had Quintana in the front group at that stage. So, Valverde, he wasn't left without help, but in that wind, there was just no way they could close the gap. And once they kind of eased off a bit, the time gap just went.
Interesting,
three, four,
we saw Movistar at the start this morning mucking about, weren't they? They went to sign on masse, and they were like little schoolboys. They were riding back, kind of hitting each other, rubbing wheels, knocking each other's handlebars, as though they were sort of. It's just an interesting little observation. They were being very jovial. They were in very good spirits.
What tinkers?
But, meanwhile, Belkin and Omega Pharma are hunched over a map in the team bus,
grunting, you
know, like the old days Dutch. In the old days of, you know, Cyril Guimard and, you know, Maurice Demure and these directors who would look at, get the map out and you know, have the day planned out. That it was very much that kind of stage, wasn't it? Old school. We haven't seen that for a long time. No. One person suggested 2009, the stage in the Camargue, but it wasn't as dramatic as that.
And it was telegraphed. Everyone knew that it was going to split.
And this first split came, it was 30 kilometres or so from the end.
I actually saw a stage at the Tour de l'Avenir in 2009, which I think might have finished here, even though it was very, very close to here. Again, similar, very similar scenario, just totally nondescript terrain, very, very flat. It's not... I don't think it's known particularly as a windy area of France. I think the winds here are just fairly sort of, you know, moderate. And that race completely split apart again due to crosswinds.
Perhaps you don't need a really strong wind. No. Perhaps you just need a really committed team. And if they're riding in the gutter, really drilling it.
Yeah.
If guys, you know, the peloton will be in one long line there. They'll all be looking for shelter. Mark Cavendish came up with a brilliant description afterwards about, you know, it's like falling, riding an echelon is like falling through ice. You've got about 5 seconds to rectify a situation once you realise what's happening.
Yeah.
Well, and Mark, have you planted that one, Daniel?
No, but how do you rectify the situation if you're falling through ice?
Well, no, if you start to realise that the ice is cracking, you've got about 5 seconds to save yourself. Sorry, he expressed it better than I did. But it's absolutely true. If you, and he described today just what happened. He was the last man onto the group. And, it, you know, that when you look up and you see two or three riders in front of you losing the wheel in front, you have, it's game over. And so, you know, Chris Froome being losing out there and being stuck in that same group, it wouldn't have been his own fault in a sense. It would just be purely because he wasn't close enough to the front.
Yeah, unless, do we know who it was that caused the gap, who was gapped there? I mean, there's also ways to do it strategically, aren't there? That it could have been, you know, a Belkin rider or a Sasse.
Yeah, absolutely. That is another way to do it, yeah. I'm not sure.
Just talking about echelons, last week when we were expecting the wind to blow down in Provence and into the
Languedoc,
we spoke to Andreas Clear of Garmin Sharp about that, and if people want to listen to what he said, he gave a bit of an echelon riding masterclass. I think that's in stage 5, I think.
Possibly, yeah.
Either stage 4 or stage 5, worth a listen.
This is the humansinvent.com Tour de France podcast, powered by Sharp.
Let's talk about Sky, because we've got an interview coming up with Servais Canavan, their sports director, a Belgian who's used to these conditions.
Dutchman.
Sorry, Dutchman. I always do that. I've got real.
Where's Lucien Van Impe?
Yeah, no, I've got a real problem with Dutch and Belgian. Sorry. Sorry, Servais. I do apologise. But yeah, Sky, I mean, Chris Froome, what a torrid time he's having, really. I mean, he lost Edvald Boasenhagen yesterday to a broken shoulder blade. That, you know, he's out the race, and he might have been a useful ally today. Kiryenka might have been a useful ally today, but he was eliminated at the weekend.
Are we sure that it was a bad day for them? Because I'm not convinced.
You're not?
Not really, because, you know, in the same way that Movistar took away the option for Sky of using Froome and Port, alternating them, then Movistar no longer have the option of using Quintana and Valverde. So, you know, was that not more of a threat than Contador on his own or Mollemar on his own?
I think it's less the time and those scenarios and more the lack of confidence he must have in his team, because when the chips were down, his team once again went AWOL, and he did look incredibly isolated. There was a point today where AG2R were chasing on the front, and Froome didn't have a teammate around him anywhere. Stannard had been at the front, he'd disappeared to the back. Geraint Thomas finally appeared, and those two put in a couple of decent shifts towards the end, but he did look incredibly isolated once again.
Is it too early to say that Sky got the selection wrong in this Tour de France? I mean, would that have happened today if Christian Knees had been there, if Bernard Eisel had been there?
Michael Rogers. Not that they could have selected him. But, no, it's a good question.
They did pretty well to hold it, limit the losses. Once the gap had gone, it was about that, really, wasn't it? Mm. Making sure that it didn't go from a minute to 2 minutes, which it could quite easily have done if Froome had been even more isolated. But they never had the numbers that that Saxo had in the front group, and so it's a pure game of numbers at that point. If you've got five committed riders in the front group and only three or three and a half in the chasing group, then the advantage is with the front group, of course.
Rich, I mean we all talked when the team was announced about the lack of it wasn't really a lack of experience as such, because there are a lot of Tours de France, combined Tours de France in that team, in the personnel.
Not that many, actually.
Well, a fair number, but it was more the lack of a kind of talismanic figure to sort of take control in difficult situations. And, you know, we all know the guys who, they don't just have a stature in their own team, but also in the peloton, and in terms of talking to other teams, making agreements with other teams, etc., etc. Izzel is certainly one of those guys. And, you know, you look at the Sky team, okay, they've got a fairly impressive pedigree, but I just always felt that they lacked someone like that, like a Michael Rogers or an Izzel.
Yeah. Lopez is a mystery to me. Lopez and Sietsu is clearly just not in form. He's been a strong rider in the past, but he's just not in form.
Well, Lopez, when he had such a bad time trial, second or third last, I think, I thought maybe is he saving himself for not necessarily stages like this, but stages when we get into the mountains. But he just doesn't look like he's got it. And Daniel, the point you make there about Mick Rogers, very valid, because he was pretty much instrumental in making the Saxo-led move that distanced Froome. He said that him and Daniele Bernatti gave each other a look. They didn't say anything to each other, but they just knew that this was the moment to go, and they went to the front, and they were the ones that kind of caused a split, and they had willing cooperation from Belkin, and Sky very definitely didn't have that. They don't look like a group that are all on that same wavelength, where things can happen without necessarily having to communicate, you know, verbally and shout and get things organised. Saxo just did it kind of almost automatically.
And look at the experience they have in that team. You know, you talk about guys like Bernatti, Roach, even Roach is, you know, is quite a young rider still, but Tozzato, these are guys with 15 Grand Tours, maybe 20 in some cases, you know.
Yeah, I mean, you mentioned the experience of Sky. I think the most experienced Sky rider has only ridden three Tours.
Right.
You know, it's Sietsu, Lopez maybe two, Geraint Thomas three. You know, so it's not a super experienced team, and they are missing, as you say, those talisman. I think we can hear now from Servus Canavan. Daniel, you spoke to him after the stage. Here is Team Sky's Belgian or Dutch sports director.
It's hardly any wind here. Well, it feels like there's hardly any wind.
Go on the bike.
Yeah. We'd said it was going to be a very straightforward stage. Did you expect any of that at all today?
Yesterday we expected it a little bit.
Right.
It always can happen. It can always happen.
Right.
And so when there's one team who wants to do it, you can do it. And today Quickstep had the plan, and they went for it. Yeah, that made the race really tough.
In the second split, when Chris was left behind, had the team switched off a little bit there? Did they think that was
splits? I don't know. You have to ask the riders. I was in the second car behind the dropped rider, so I couldn't give an answer on that.
Okay. Just as far as the team is concerned, you've lost Edvald. It's been a difficult day today. Are you worried about in the next few days and the strength of the team in as well?
Yeah, everybody forgets maybe that we had seven guys in the first group, so they were all there. Some of the seven are not really specialists in crosswinds, so but they were there, the team was there, and so I think many others were already dropped, so I don't think we are not worried about the team's capabilities. But if you see the breakaway at the end with seven Saxo bank, and you're really going for it, then if you have only a few left behind in the peloton, then it's hard. But that's pretty normal, and we are not worried.
Okay.
But of course, a minute is a minute. Yeah.
This is a humansinvent.com Tour de France podcast with Richard Moore, Daniel Freib, and Lionel Burney.
Okay, here we are in the breadbasket of France, and the stage winner today, that was the other story today, Mark Cavendish bounced back from his couple of disappointments and his treatment on Wednesday during the time trial. Yeah, sorry,
just
Daniel.
Just a short interlude. Talking of bread, Rich, what did you make of the buffet today? Because we've been, when we've been here in the past, it has been it's been similar to what it was today. They just basically, they kill a cow and they haul it into the car park.
I didn't make it.
And spit roast it.
I didn't make it to the buffet. Right. Was it good?
It's just a cow, a dead cow.
Oh,
being
I'm really
cooked,
sorry. I was unfortunately.
It was quite harrowing.
I was otherwise engaged at the time. I stupidly, and I missed a chunk of the racing because I stupidly agreed to give an interview today to the makers of a forthcoming documentary film about Paul Kimmage called Rough Rider. So I gave a 48-minute interview to them in which I discussed the enigma that is Paul Kimmage. And that was enjoyable.
I said about that the best.
And you missed the best stage of the Tour.
There's some kind of karma in that, I think. Some moral in that story.
A stage for the ages.
Well, I was reminiscing fondly about Paul Kimmage.
Well, should we talk
anyway,
Cavendish. The way that Amiga Farmer Quickstep carved up the finish was impressive. They carved up that cow
earlier.
Brilliant.
It was good though, wasn't it? With Nicky Terpstra making the initial move, forcing
clever
Bodnar.
Yeah.
Was
very
it Bodnar
clever
from Cannondale to make the counter, putting Peter Sagan onto the back foot a little bit. Then they still had Sylvain Chavanel, Amiga Farmer, to give Cav the lead out. A kind of lead out light, really, wasn't it? But it was still more than enough. And then Cavendish had plenty of speed to keep Sagan off.
It was a great team effort. And interestingly, just remembering back to what Cavendish said, the Kwiatkowski, is that how you pronounce his name?
Yeah.
Kwiatkowski, his Polish young Polish teammate who's still in the white jersey.
Yeah.
I think he sacrificed himself to allow Cavendish to get in that front echelon.
Yeah.
I think he was just in front of Cavendish, and there were a couple of wheels up that the gap was opening, and he, I don't know if he gave him a hand sling or something, but he helped him become the last man in the echelon. So he sacrificed himself, lost a minute there. And it was a fantastic team effort to have three men there as opposed to Cannondale's two. The attack by Terpstra with a kilometre to go was genius, wasn't it, really?
Yeah, it was very good, and Cavendish is outstanding in these situations in crosswinds. And I spoke to Fabrizio Guidi at the finish line. He's a director sportif for Saxo Bank, and he, you know, talks about the importance of motivation in these stages. And he said they've been drumming it into their riders for 3 days now that these two stages, you know, something could happen, and they have to be up for it. And you can just tell that Cavendish he relishes these stages so much, and that really translates into, you know, fantastic positioning, the ability to really grit his teeth and close gaps when they do open.
But those, I mean, he said he made a bigger effort to get onto that into the echelon than he did in the final sprint. He put out more watts for that effort.
Mm.
I mean, we talk about Cavendish as the greatest sprinter of all time, but stages like today show what a brilliant all-round bike rider is, what great racing instinct he has. His positioning is excellent, his ability to read a race, and just the physical ability to be in that group. You know, when you look at some of the people left behind.
Touching on what Daniel said, it's the desire, really. I mean, you know, he's had a bit of an up-and-down tour, hasn't he? I mean, it's been kind of good day, bad day for him. But if he hadn't won today, it's a long old week and a bit to the next sprint opportunity, which is on the Champs-Élysées in Paris on the last day. So it wasn't a case of the tour turning into a bit of not a disaster for Cavendish had he not won today, but he now gives himself a great chance. You know, it's almost like propelling him into the mountain stage. It was going to be tough for him to slog his way through with
tomorrow's
with the
a possibility for him as well.
Second category, too close to the finish. I think maybe too much. And I think if Saxo and Movistar and Belkin are looking keen, I can't see that being a sprint for him. But
yeah.
It's a long way to Paris.
It is.
For him.
I mean, it's a long way for the last sprint stage.
It is. And that's really all he's got.
Yeah.
4 years
in a row.
To motivate him.
He's won there, hasn't he?
Just going back to his ability and his desire in Estons, you know, if someone had told us that there was going to be a group of 15 or 20 today and it was going to go away, probably the first name you would have written down would have been Mark Cavendish.
What's amazing though is that guys like Greipel, you know, such a big, strong, powerful rider, misses it. Kittel misses it. you know, these other sprinters who should theoretically be also very good in these conditions.
Well, Kittel missed the first one, didn't
yeah,
he? Because he was in the Valverde group.
Yeah.
And I mean, that was a bit of a surprise. I mean, he's 7 foot four of German
condensed muscle.
German beef cake, beef again.
He's adding 4 inches every day.
I don't think there were any Lotto riders, you know, in that front group at all.
No, and they didn't aid the. They didn't do anything on the second group. They left. They left all of that to Sky. So whether they were thinking Sky will bring this back and we will be fresh and we will outwit Omega Pharma in the front group, I don't know, but it was odd that they didn't commit any resources to just even a man or two might have.
Yeah, that word commitment, Lionel, Rod Ellingworth, Mark Cavendish's old coach and now at Team Sky, said at the finish that was the great thing about Cavendish and Omega Pharma, they were so committed, and he contrasted that with Lotto, Belisol, that they, you know, they were hedging their bets, you know, was it going to come back, was it not, instead of saying, right, we're going to take control of this and we're going to make sure it comes back.
Well, I spoke yesterday actually to Frans Maassen, the sports director of the Belkin team. He's definitely Dutch.
In a piece a few years ago, I read that he was a soigneur. I didn't even
That's much worse.
I was only a young lad at the time.
Brilliant.
You didn't know that he'd been in one of the most amazing breaks in the tour's history.
Starting out.
He was a very good rider, wasn't he? Did he not ruin that World Cup race in Newcastle?
He did, the Wincanton Classic.
The Wincanton
up
Classic.
Gray Street.
Buckler, Super Confex, all these teams.
I was on Gray Street that day. I think Sean Kelly was third.
I think you might be right.
Yeah.
Oh, what year was that? 1989. Woo! Lionel, high five. So anyway, Frans Maassen. Sorry about that. I had a
Daniel
chat.
Daniel was only 8 at the time.
Daniel, yeah. He must have been 8. A young boy.
Anyway, carry on.
You were beating Justin Rose at the time,
yeah,
I think.
Probably. Four years later.
Okay,
anyway,
sorry.
We can talk about that another day.
Yeah, we will. So anyway, I had a brief chat with Frans Maassen, and it wasn't about crosswinds or anything like that. It was about the team. They've got two riders, Tendam and Malema, who are both very well placed and even better placed now to mount an assault in the mountains next week.
Second and fifth.
Yeah, very, very good. And he said what a surprise that was even to them, and talked about their prospects next week, and also about the fact that the team, formerly Rabobank, has a new sponsor. You're having a great Tour de France. Two riders, Malema, did a very good ride yesterday. You must be happy with how things have been going so far.
Yeah, it's also for us a little surprise. You hope all that he can do what he proves now, but you never know. And there are a lot of riders, say, for example, the guys like Brajkovic, Kunigo, a lot of these guys, Jurgen van den Broek, they are all at the same level like Bauke and Tendam.
Mm.
But now it's a little bit an hour advantage still now, and yeah, you hope they can prove it in the most important race in the year. But
which is the greater surprise, Malema or Tendam?
It's the same. Last year was already Tendam was 8th in the Vuelta, and a very difficult Vuelta, and now we try to give him some help the first week, and we saw that he was in a good condition, and also with different way in going to the race with Geesink, we could give another rider a little bit more help to stay in the GC, but still surprised that they, after 11 days, still 3 and 6 first.
Mm. What do you do with two riders in the top six? Do you try and finish one of them on the podium, or do you are you prepared to sort of sacrifice one to try and help the other one?
Yeah, we see it day by day, because even today it looks like a pretty easy stage. It's long, but not that difficult. But last year we were also in a good position, and the most easiest day in the Tour, we crashed 14 times, and all the Tour was over for us. And it was really, really easy stage. That there was the big crash, you remember, with the big crash just before the finish. So you can always lose the Tour in a split moment. And of course, Froome is now in a good position, but still we are only halfway. And we saw it with Port. One bad day and everything is over.
Is Froome beatable, do you think?
Yeah, I think so. It's not the same team. Of course, he's the best rider in the Tour, by far, maybe. But still, he needs a great team, and he has a great team, but it is a little bit less strong than last year, and there will be attacks on his position.
So if you had a situation where you had your two men, Tendam and Malema, with Froome, would it be possible for them to take turns attacking him?
Yeah, for this moment we survived the next three stages, and then we have the big stage to the moment too, and after that we know really what's possible, and there we see in the rest day our last week strategy. So for the moment is to keep the positions and do a good moment too.
You have a new sponsor which you confirmed on the eve of the tour. What kind of difference does that make to the riders, knowing that there's some stability, they're able to look into the future a little bit more?
Of course that was really important, because after the stop of Rabobank, there was for us the chance that it would stop with all the team. And, now with the new sponsor and the new colors and everything, it gives a boost. And of course, this boost is even bigger when our chief of the team is in the third position in the tour. And it was a long time ago that we could do with two Dutch guys 4 and 5 in a difficult Pyrenees stage. So that gives us a big boost.
The Tour de France with humansinvent.com. Innovation, craftsmanship and design.
So here we are, the Tour de France podcast with humansinvent.com, and we have just a few more items of business, one of them being a new competition, and this is to win a phone call from Jonathan Vauters, general manager at Garmin-Sharp, chief executive.
I think that'd be a very long phone call.
It could be a very long phone call.
Cancel all of the plans that day.
Yeah, definitely. He does like to talk. So he's going to call somebody on the rest day. Our competition last week to win a phone call from David Miller attracted lots of entries, and it was a great success. Jen loves cycling, certainly enjoyed her conversation with David Miller. So one of you will be receiving a call from Jonathan Vauters on Monday. If you again would just hashtag tour moment, send a tweet with hashtag tour moment with some of your favourite memories, it can be anything at all, and we'll select a winner. Please don't select the famous wasp sting that Jonathan Vauters suffered in 2001, was it? Or you can if you like. Might not pick it though. Slightly, the quirkier the better for your tour memories. Hashtag tour moment. Now it's over to Ciro.
And now, Pedaler de Charme.
Thank you, Ciro, our Italian friend from Gazzetta dello Sport, who will join us again imminently, as will Tan Man, I'm sure, who joined us last night. So, Pedaler de Charme, I have a nomination today.
Go for it.
It's never thought I would say this, but Cadel Evans.
Oh, why?
This morning I witnessed him riding towards the start with his helmet on his handlebars, wearing a cotton team cap, and as he was riding up to the start with his bodyguards in tow, as they always are, as one bodyguard, George, he weaved over to the side to an Australian flag, took off his sweaty cotton team cap and handed it to them, which I thought was a very nice gesture. So Pedaler de Charme today for me is Cadel Evans.
The Aussies seem to have this bond with their fans, don't they? Yesterday it was Simon
Tan Man. Yesterday it was Tan Man.
Yesterday Tan Man, of course. Maybe it's because the fans have made such a commitment to come.
Well, all the way from London. All the way from Clapham. Yeah, you're right. It's a long way.
Can I nominate Nicholas or Nicola Roach or Roche?
Nicholas.
Well, it depends on what is he really. He's Irish.
He's Irish. Sounds Irish. Yeah. Sounds more Irish.
He was really impressive in the front group today. I thought he's had a bit of criticism over the years for being one of those riders who seems to be kind of fixated on overall position rather than on perhaps winning a stage. He's kind of the anti Dan Martin, if you like. You get the feeling with him that he would much rather finish sort of 12th or 11th, or try and claw his way up into the top 10 than sort of risk everything for a stage win. And so you wouldn't automatically assume that he'd be the sort of person who would empty the tank for a teammate. But of course, being in the Saxo team with Contador to ride for, I thought he rode really strongly today. He he looked a little bit, you know, his pedalling style isn't dissimilar to his dad's. It's not.
What do you think?
It's
he's
not
chunkier.
He's chunkier, yeah, but the souplesse of his legs is not dissimilar. It's not in the same league as the Stephen Roach, who looked like his chain wasn't connected up to the chain set and the derailleur. He was that smooth, but he's my pedaleur de charme today.
Mm. Yeah, Roach had always sat very back, far back, didn't he? And just very when he was in shape, he looked great. Daniel, any nominations, Pedaleur de Charme or Solon's Charme?
I would say Bennati today. A rider who has really sort of metamorphosed from a sprinter into just... He's just a very good ruler, looks fantastic on the bike. And
the saddle looks good as well, I think.
Yeah, and Bennati's also quite a nice chap.
Yeah. I think I'll sort of reintroduce the Inertia Prize for today as well, and award that not to Alejandro Valverde, because you don't expect these Spanish climbers and teams to necessarily thrive in these conditions, but Marcel Kittel, come on, mate. Took the day off.
I didn't care. Took the day off. Come on.
6'4" of German condensed muscle, he may be.
Yeah.
With a fine head of blonde hair. But took the day off. Could have had four stage wins.
I don't think he wanted another encounter with Gerard Holtz. I think that's what kept him in the back group.
Or indeed Daniel Freeb. Anyway, we'll make it a brief one. We'll make it a brief one tonight. We're sitting about an hour and a half away, aren't we, Lionel?
Long drive.
Who booked this hotel, Lionel?
I booked this hotel, but it is close to tomorrow's start.
Okay, we'll let you off then. Until tomorrow, goodbye, Daniel.
Goodbye.
Goodbye, Lionel.
Well, I'm going to be driving you to your hotel, Richard. So.
Oh, you're driving, are you?
Is it my turn?
I think it might be, yeah. Yep. I've got a feature to write on Mont Ventoux.
Well, it's me driving this.
Long way to Mont Ventoux. You've got to write the feature on Mont Ventoux or about Mont Ventoux.